Antonio Boas seems to be the first in modern times to have this experience. 4 years before Betty and Barney Hill, Antonio was plowing his field at night to avoid the heat. He saw a bright red star that he never noticed before. It would move while sometimes getting bigger. Distracted but unbothered, he kept working. Making his rounds and looking again, he realized it wasn't getting bigger, it was getting closer. When it came to the ground, he panicked and started driving his truck away as fast as possible. That's when the engine died and he took off on foot. But they got him, and they put him in the creft. He was put in a room with a vapor that caused him to vomit, seemingly to expel any toxins within to prep him for the next part. That would have been absolutely unthinkable to even any sci-fi writer. A woman entered the room, not a human woman, but a feminine being nonetheless. She induced an incredible arousal in Antonio, and they got down to business. Once this hypnotic state wore off, that is, post-ejaculation, he became enthralled with regret and overcome with a dreadful feeling. But this was no ordinary post-nut syndrome. The womanly creature gestured to her womb and then gestured to the ceiling of the craft, seemingly rather to the sky. The crew politely gave him a tour of the craft and dropped his ass back off in the field with a mission accomplished. There was no way Antonio could continue on in his life without some kind of mental help. So he squeaked, and understandably so. Needless to say, nobody believed him, but some of the skeptics began to second guess when Antonio became profusely sick only days later. Seeing doctors, we came to find that this was no stomach bug. Antonio had radiation poisoning. He had encountered more radiation than would have been possible at this particular time in history. Somehow, he recovered his health and went on to become a lawyer, which to me is oddly the most random part of this true story. Had he not the evidence of this radiation sickness, he might have met a much different fate from his fellow men. Looking from the outside, we feel like we would know what to do in this kind of event. Foresight is 2020 when we are not the deer in the headlights. We should all ask ourselves before jumping to any conclusions. If this was to happen to me, who on earth would I be able to tell? How would I go about finding help enough to be able to go about a normal life again? In our video on Bentov, we found a pattern concerning the writings of men who died early. It seems to hold up over time like a Toyota Tacoma. This can be said with equal comparison to Harvard professor Dr. John Mack. When he realized that the abduction experience extended far and wide, he decided to write about his findings in his book, simply titled Abduction. Harvard was pissed.
We're very embarrassed, and embarrassed for the profession, and a little worried about John himself. John is a man of great gift and great intelligence, but he's also a man of who tends to take on enthusiasms, and in this time he's gone too far.
Rude. But when he decided to write his follow-up, Passport to the Cosmos, Harvard gave him a strong warning not to do so. But he did. And in a completely unrelated event, our beloved doctor was killed by a drunk driver while walking home from a presentation he was giving. The driver was never publicly identified or charged. John's family seems to have nothing to say about it. But let's not do conspiracy here. Instead, let's explore what Johnny had to say. In his words, I am concerned that if too much attention is brought to the study of physical manifestations alone, the profound significance of this subject may not be realized. So, even though we do have a solid base of physical evidence like scarring, ovary removal, and implants, these events seem to be more parallel to near-death experiences and DMT trips. In this way, we are forced to appreciate realities that exist beyond our biological survival senses. We know about body and mind, but there seems to be a third zone that combines elements of both and concepts beyond either. Space and time are constructs of the mind to simplify the chaos we are surrounded by. There is a lot going on outside of our understanding, and we usually do a good job of keeping it at bay. The whole idea of the universe being made of dead matter that we emerged from is brand-ass new. We invented that worldview, and we fight tooth and nail to keep it that way, despite the fact that 9 out of 10 people have experienced something they can't explain. The universe is filled with beings of sentience. They have been called many different things over time. Spirits, gods, fairies, djinn, angels, demons, ghosts, entities, and of course, aliens. We seem to love putting things into neat categories, but when these friends of ours pluck us out of the hard drive that we live in for various reasons that we will cover, we have no choice but to call it something. The Eastern world seems to have a much easier time processing these occurrences, as they tend to not deny realms outside of their own. Why have we lost our ability to perceive these things to the point that we now marginalize self-evident truths when they come creeping in? Well, in John's words, the difficulty is that this almost exclusive concentration on the material world, whose extreme manifestation is unbridled consumerism, has resulted in the virtual atrophy of the capacity to perceive or experience the exquisite and awesome beauty of these other dimensions. So, damn, programmed and brainwashed. I think Carl warned us about this back in the day. But these beings do not seem to respect the walls we have built between us and them. And they certainly do not hide from us like the mainstream narrative assumes. In fact, we hide them from us with a hot mix of denial and ignorance. If there is one common theme running through all these accounts, it is reproduction. Something about us having babies is a big deal to these grays in particular. So, right off the bat, I'll address those who will be suggesting that I leave this subject alone and get back to Gnosis and alchemy. I'll go on record saying, if you study Gnosticism and you dismiss this, you've missed the point. These new findings may very well be a good part of what the Gnostics were referring to, especially with this breeding program, but we'll come back to that heavy jazz in a bit. You've heard the age-old question, if beings alien to us are abducting and sexing up people on Earth, why are they always choosing country bumpkins out camping in the wilderness or attending to the farm wearing coveralls with no t-shirt underneath? Well, here's the thing. The axiom is flat wrong. Abduction and experience absurdity is more abundant than anyone suspects. However, if you are a physician running a respected medical practice, you're gonna wanna keep them lips sealed, and for obvious reasons. But you would still need help processing your experience. This is where men like Harvard professor Dr. John Mack enter the picture. As we have seen, Harvard does not want their Harvard name associated with Harvard professor Dr. John Mack, who taught at Harvard while John Mack was at Harvard doing John Mack stuff.
Where did John go to college?
At Harvard. John's job was to help anonymous people understand what has happened to them without putting their name in a book or a newspaper. However, with permission under pseudonyms, we can hear their stories. And there are surprisingly many more cases from these modern peeps than there are from the stereotype. People like Kirsten, Yumzhinov, who is a millionaire, chess player, and holder of office, and Whitley Strieber, a best-selling author, have not been so shy, and surprisingly have avoided the heavy ridicule received by Travis Walton. But it is easy to understand why people under the pressure of normal everyday society would hide the traumas from their peers. Travis lost about everything until years later when these events became slightly more normal. Now, a video like this is prone to accidentally become a sort of trying to convince type of video, but I want to avoid that. I've never been here to convert people to anything, and this ain't your first abduction documentary. So straight up, some people lie. Some people don't. I don't know exactly what that ratio is. And to be clear, 9 out of 10 times that I hear someone reporting an abduction event publicly, I dismiss it as a fanatic trying to catch the wave of hype. Body language alone is a tell-all sometimes. But when I see men like Carl Higdon and Travis Walton speak, I know that they are in that second group of people who are not lying. The general public might rail against them, backed up with ignorance. But the professionals who pay attention to these things say differently. And this would be not even mentioning the physical evidence that they have to boot. The example with Carl Higdon being that he had heavy scarring in his lungs, and found out later, undergoing studies to understand what he went through, that his lungs had been completely healed, like impossibly healed. His truck was dropped off miles from the site where he was hunting, and it was placed in the dirt with no tire marks leading up to the truck. The entity who abducted Higdon mentioned to him that he returned him saying that he was not suitable for the project that they were doing, which is strange considering Higdon's vasectomy. Both him and Travis Walton went missing, by the way. What would you do upon coming back? Could you keep a secret like that? Think about it. Travis Walton didn't have a damn choice. The whole state was looking for him for 5 days, and his boys were suspected for murder. There was no option for him to reappear dramatically like that and say, oh, I just got lost and happened to have lost 50 pounds. No. People wanted to know, so he told them. And then they got upset. Why'd they ask then? The last tidbit I'll mention for the debunking portion of this video is the idea that abductions are vivid dreams. Many people have hypothesized this, assuming that, like the movies, abductions happen to people from their beds. And the brain produces a lot of psychedelic chemicals during sleep. This is understandable, but most abductions happen from traveling cars. A good chunk of the remaining abductions happen to hunters and campers who are awake and coherent and see a sort of craft approach them from a distance, heavy portions that remain in their conscious memory. Remaining in their memory even before regressive hypnosis, which, by the way, can be a bit misleading as a piece of evidence, and we'll get to that later. All right, so genitals. What's going on here? Straight down the timeline seems to be a complicated sexual reproductive project, the goal of which we can only speculate, but they seem to need to make hybrids with their psychic capabilities, but with our reproductive abilities. The strange thing about this hybridization program is that there is no fictional literature or sci-fi movies early enough to input this theme into the collective consciousness. These events are happen chance and share the same function all over the world with no obvious communication linking together these themes. Basically, people who are abducted oftentimes think they are the only ones coming forward about this, considering how suppressed it is, not just by science, but by the abductees themselves, apparently. As John Mack went through his career offering therapy to these people who were essentially used as breeders, he noted that these people felt utterly alone and were oftentimes in great distress about not being able to see their extraterrestrial children, especially the women who feel a deep bond with the beings that are taken from them. We have to remember that there is a damn good reason why most women do not come forward or public with their experiences. They are quite literally accusing rape and child abduction to an intelligent species that is only now debated amongst serious scholars. Many abductees are told that their hybrid children will be the future inheritors of the Earth after we have destroyed its ability to sustain life. This leads some to assume that the hybrid children are physical beings as opposed to astral beings, but I wouldn't jump to that conclusion just because of a planet. A planet is most likely a multidimensional being. We just see it as physical because that is how we see. as if that's not the scariest thing you've ever heard, these abductees who provide for this hybridization also seem to report a sort of telepathic shuffling through their minds and habits. They say that the large black almond eyes of the entities will cause a sort of hypnosis where the being can go through a person's mind like a file cabinet, where the information is then used to know what best things to do with this person's reproductive supplements to their program. Many times, women who carry these hybrids as an incubator have absolutely stunned their doctors with rapid healing of particular ailments that they have had for years, like Dennett in 1996. Most of the time, they won't tell the doctor why this has happened for fear of being shipped to a mental asylum, and sadly so, that's because this has happened before. Very telling about our society. But they save that information for specialized therapists like John Mack and Bud Hopkins. And, of course, we have the probing of the brain through the nose, the navel sometimes, and, of course, other areas that are reported even by experiencers who report the abduction as more of an out-of-body experience than that of a physical abduction. What is fascinating about the probes is the physical evidence left behind. Scar tissue in symmetrical designs appearing on multiple people is staggering, considering they're reporting an OBE, essentially. But we do see this same phenomenon with stigmatas and demonic possession, hinting at a sort of mind over matter, a placebo effect that we know of to be real. But what is not explained by mind over matter is the implants. People often carry things in their bodies after abduction. A lot of people like to bring up that these metals are found in meteorites, and that's true, but it doesn't make them rare on Earth necessarily. But what is worth noting is the implants that have given off clear radio waves to detectors, and even more amazing is the lack of swelling in any of the cases across the board. If a piece of metal goes into your skin, 100% of the time the area will become inflamed and attempt to reject the metallic splinter. To the astonishment of many doctors, metal splinters resulting from abduction, they don't cause swelling and instead seem to coexist biologically with the person's physiology. The body does not attempt to reject it. After being pulled out, the radio waves emitting from it can still be measured while isolated, but decrease over time until going flat a few weeks later, hinting to some degree that these devices are powered by the person's body like a battery. The people that John Mack worked with for his last book written were not picked up at Burning Man after a three-day LSD binge. These subjects are parents, teachers, lawyers, doctors, etc., and also a medicine man or shaman of Africa named Credo, who we have spoken about in a previous video that you have not seen yet. It should be no surprise that the shaman had little to no trouble integrating these experiences into his life compared to our Western friends, who found a great ordeal of darkness before coming to terms with what was happening. But for the most part, these people contacted John after coming to know his work as a private therapist specializing in paranormal. Credo, however, did not seem to give a heck whether or not he was anonymous. I tip my hat. I want to see Credo on one of those Thug Life memes. John Mack describes the moments that an abductee can no longer deny their experience as ontological shock. When one of his subjects, Sharon, could no longer disown her experiences, she said it felt like a sledgehammer had been taken to everything around her. Abby cried out when remembering the moment that she came to terms with this, quoting, "I know what it is, and I am not ready for that. Seeing them clearly like that. I was awake in the here and now, dealing with acceptance of a reality that's been happening to me." John added that it was as if the part of her mind that questioned the validity of her experience was shattered upon seeing these creatures face to face. Celeste described her state as being in isolation after her spout of missing time that was only one day. That means isolation, considering that there was no way for her to tell anyone what happened to her during that day. The only person she told about this was John Mack. So even her friends and family were now like strangers to her. What is important to note about the missing time phenomenon is that it is frequent, but we don't hear about them all, considering they mostly consist of a couple hours or days as compared to Walton's 5 days of missing time and Higdon's, which seemed to catch media fire considering their missing persons case beforehand. During the abductions, it seems that the minds of the beings will leak into your mind. Their ideals are able to be converted into our heads. This is where the scenarios get complicated. Karen said that her abductors spoke of the future of mankind and of a new race that, quote, will be able to reproduce, and they will know love and happiness like humans know, and they will know their soul and their consciousness like we don't know, and they will inhabit the planet and take care of it and make it a beautiful place. She then asked to speak with the UFO manager. Karen, if you're watching this, I don't mean that. We do take this all very seriously and lightly at the same time. Love you, Karen. Looking at this picture that Karen drew, that seems to be that of a hybrid resulting from this program. We seem to get a bit of a hint as to what the program has for its goals. It seems that the people who are more psychologically strong, those who can become calm in this horrifying experience, are communicated to by these entities more openly than the ones who resist. So let that be a note to future abductees. If you do find yourself in that situation, play it cool. Ask to look around. You'll get a little bit more courtesy than if you're, you know, a cat stuck with a hook in its mouth. You know, you're just going to make it difficult for them to do what they're going to do. Oh, God, that sound like that senator who said the thing, and that's not how. This is a complicated scenario. I think my income is low enough. I should be saying scenario. What's up, dude? Do you want to say anything about gray aliens?
No.
But playing it cool. A few people coherent enough to ask the entities where they come from were told that they come from nowhere and everywhere. This obviously does not make sense to us in our 3D reality, but it is worth contemplation considering that they did not list a particular star system or planet. This is the kind of abstract detail that we might find in the Apocrypha of John or some other cryptic religious writing. This is very interesting and very conflicting. It makes the entities seem like good guys in a way, but can easily be argued that there must be one hell of a moral deficiency here. If attaining your goal of peace and love on Earth means rape, harvest, and the removal of an existing species on Earth, I mean, unless it's their planet in the first place and we are new here. If you've seen our episode Thoth of Agartha, you know that this is not necessarily impossible at all. But why do they need our physical bodies that are capable of reproduction in order to give their species the ability to feel love? This is a very dark question. Speaking of reproduction, it is no secret by the archetype of the gray alien that they don't have any fun down there. Not only do they not have working bits, but they don't have any bits at all, if you know what I'm saying. Oddly enough, bringing us full circle back to some of the more calm abductees. Very many people who have been cool have been given tours of the facilities where they were experimented on. And they report that the grays are grown on board the craft, like in a laboratory, which makes sense considering how they look if you consider a couple of options about where they come from. My first thought is that of an underground place like Agartha or underwater bases, without the abundance of sunlight we get, a humanoid species would surely lose the pigment in their skin and develop these huge eyes to see in the dark. But that doesn't explain the lack of genitals, though. That concept makes me think of the vast distances between habitable worlds. If we left the planet and went to another galaxy or distant star, we would be living in outer space, literally. Generations would come and go without plant life or gravity. We would surely lose muscle mass and melanin in the skin. Perhaps this is how they lost touch with their natural living and reproduction systems. And once it happened, it was too late to throw it in reverse, Terry. It is hypothesized that when they found us, they decided to join together to revive what they once lost. But neither one of those things is what I think is happening here. Allow me to introduce a third option. We live in a high-density reality. Despite the enormous gap between atoms and there being practically no mass in each atom, everything seems to be solid matter. Physicists to this day cannot figure that out. But here it is. And this level of density must be fascinating to see grow life if looking at it from a sidereal point of view. Oh, once upon a time, we were certain that life could not thrive in high-pressure boiling water at the bottom of the ocean. When we finally had the tech to penetrate into that world, we became enthralled in studying how these fish reproduce. We were certain that life could not thrive in outer space. And when we found out that those little the six-leg pig looking things were doing just fine up there, again, we got to work on understanding it. The biggest part of that study was understanding how they reproduce. It's interesting to note that viruses don't have reproductive organs. Two viruses cannot come together in order to create new viruses. They have to have hosts. They have to have bodies in order to thrive. And unfortunately, in the case of viruses, without having reproductive organs, they harm other beings in order to survive. When we pulled those fish up and started fiddling, well, we have a real fish out of water scenario here. That fish might consider the scientist to be a demon because of the stress. But we don't see ourselves as evil in this study. After all, they are lower life forms, right? We have discussed many times on this channel how difficult it is for humans to come to terms with the idea that they are not top dog. It is practically inconceivable to us. In any case, when we take a good look at it, it seems as if we are the fish. We are that little six-legged bacteria that found a way to thrive in space. And it is very interesting to anyone outside of the hard drive looking in. Considering that higher life forms always seem to study or feed upon the lower life forms, it would be weirder if the abduction thing wasn't happening. To deny the abduction scenario is the same as saying that we are the highest life form in existence. And that math just, it doesn't work out. If you designed a video game that was perfect, and then the characters in the video game became sentient and reproducing and started trashing the place, you might want to go in there and snoop around a little bit, but you wouldn't be able to go in to that video game with your human body. You would have to form an avatar, an entity that would be sustainable in that reality. And in that reality, you would have superpowers and psychic abilities to the characters in the game. You could essentially move them through walls and windows, knowing well the very code that is responsible for that wall or window to exist. This would seem like magic or extremely advanced technology to the inside of the game. With that in mind, let's hear what Dr. David Jacobs has had to say right before his retirement on the subject. Eggs are taken from women and sperm is taken from men. There's an instrument that takes sperm away. We have very detailed drawings of this device from across decades around the world. The abductees are taken on board a circular ship. They describe gray aliens, slender, big heads, and big eyes, four fingers. There are two kinds of grays, it seems. One type is smaller, about 3 feet tall, and they do the menial tasks. The taller gray aliens seem to be their bosses and perform more of the medical procedures. What is the probability of the gray alien being from another planet? It's low, because we know that they grow them on board. I would never come up with anything like that, but a whole bunch of people have described incubators where grays are being grown. This is common. Whether it's someone born and raised in rural India or Brazil, it doesn't matter. When we hear about the table they are placed on, I'll say, the table has four legs? Not a single person has ever said yes. The way the tables are described is they come right out of the floor. That's a good example of one of the incredibly consistent details. Everything has this metallic sort of rounded surface. There's never been anything like this in human history, and if it's not happening, it's one of the most important brain malfunctions ever found, unquote. I tend to have a haunting feeling that we were not found by the Greys, but instead founded by the Greys. I wonder if they exist in actual reality and have created not only us, but our world, and use us as containers for their lack of soul to learn a characteristic that is alien to them. Not really a pleasant thought. Unlike the majority of researchers covering this hybridization project, Mac does not believe this to be a physically real objective thing. He believes this to be pregnancies that are concerned with the astral body. To most people, this would make the entire idea more complicated, but anyone who has studied in Eastern teachings, or perhaps has taken DMT, this left turn in the plot actually helps answer some questions. We have learned from Bentov, the human being is indeed many levels of consciousness. Therefore, as a result, there are many levels of being and form that result from it. But just like all these mysteries, there seems to be a middle ground or a gray area in this case. Pun intended. These hybrids seem to have a foot in both the physical and the astral realms. This leads us to the possibly most dark aspect of this phenomenon. Abducted women are oftentimes asked advice on how to care for these babies. They will have mothers hold these hybrids up against their own flesh to get skin-to-skin contact. The mother will recognize the child as her own and become very emotional, emotion that is downright alien to the aliens. They are confused by this outburst of emotion and in a way inspired by it to the point of study and to research into it. Unfortunately, the mothers are rarely able to see it from that point of view. Many of them express how dramatic it is to care for a child that seems malnourished and cold, only to have it taken away again and not knowing when or even if they will ever see that child again. Mothers will be asked to help these entities arrange a playroom for these hybrids in a stone-cold, matter-of-fact way. While the mother is compelled to frantically make adjustments to the living quarters of these hybrids, she understands that The reason these children don't thrive like they are meant to is this very lack of love that the beings, the Greys, just can't understand any more than we can understand their ability to flux gravity or move through windows. Women know when they have a child in the world. It is in their DNA. This is not a conspiracy theory. Check out this article. When pregnant, the cells of the baby migrate into the mother's bloodstream and then circle back into the baby. It's called fetal maternal microchimerism. For 41 weeks, the cells circulate and merge backwards and forwards. And after the baby is born, many of these cells stay in the mother's body, leaving a permanent imprint in the mother's tissues, bones, brain, and skin, and often stay there for decades. Every single child a mother has will afterwards leave a similar imprint on her body too. Even if a pregnancy doesn't go to full term, these cells still migrate into your bloodstream. Research has shown that if a mother's heart is injured, fetal cells will rush to the site of the injury and change into different types of cells that specialize in mending the heart. The baby helps repair the mother while the mother builds the baby. It is incredible how mother's bodies protect the baby at all costs. And the baby protects and rebuilds the mother back so that the baby can develop safely and survive. Studies have shown cells from a fetus in a mother's brain 18 years after she gave birth. I mean, that's amazing. This phenomenon is obviously going to be more traumatic for women who share a deep cellular connection with their hybrid children, whereas men who are oftentimes just the sperm donors in this case. And, well, I hate to say it, but as above, so below. It seems some things just don't change in the higher realms. In any case, it seems that there is a job getting done that has worked through these events and seems to have a myriad of collateral that affects our reality as it moves forward, as planned or otherwise. This makes the Earth valuable and rare. As Credo has said, this is one of the few planets that is capable of creating and sustaining life. It is a jewel in the cosmic crown, so to speak. Our increasing destruction of its life appears to be a crime of cosmic proportions. If something is forced to step in about this problem, you can bet it's going to be a form of tough love. In a way, the trauma involved in the abduction scenario can be seen as a direct reflection of exactly what we do to our environments and each other, especially in the way that we study lower life forms. Now, in no way am I saying that the individual abductees are guilty of anything that would cause them to receive this strange genre of abuse. But as a species, as a whole, when we look at the big picture of what we do and our own behavior, and then add the abduction phenomenon to that big picture, stepping back and taking a look at both together, well, maybe we should start acting a lot less surprised.
Taken as child you were raised, but now the world is ablaze. How small's the box you live in? Does everything fit in its